Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy Connecting the Light. My guest today is Stephen Redding. He's written two books relating to his near-death experiences, which started at the age of four, and what he wants to do as a result of the vivid memories he has about these incidences is to draw up those moments to impart a message of what nearly dying and crossing over into the other realms has taught him about living life in the here and now. So welcome to the program, Stephen.
Good afternoon, Michael. I'd like to come to you from the woodlands of eastern Pennsylvania. And I'm happy to be on your show.
Well, we're very happy to have you here. One hears quite a bit about near-death experiences, but I must say I'm never failed to be curious about the nature of people's experiences.
I think I lost you.
Oh, hello.
Yes.
No, we're here, okay. Yes, having had a number of near-death experiences, I'm quite sure that you developed an interest in other people's near-death experiences. So let me ask you, do you find that your experiences are very much in line with other people's?
Well, you know, it's interesting, but these dying experiences, and I'm going to call certainly some of them are dying experiences, so I know from a rational mind standpoint, it's hard to put your hands around it, but I think that I'm going to refer to them as, in general, edge experiences, implying that the experience takes one to the edge of this reality or world and introduces us to some of the others. But just recently, I spoke at the International Association for Near-Death Studies, and I was surprised that once they found me that such an association actually existed. I was the speaker in San Diego last year. But right. Nonetheless, one of the telling moments for me of that week was that there were 14 other experiencers at that convention, mm-hmm. and we spent an evening together in a room by ourselves, and so much of the subjective, early subjective experiences of the light, for me, often a loud bang, some obviously strong, pronounced, sensuous experience, along with the sense of rapid movement, followed by just a state of grandeur, or, you know, everything spoke, everything breathed, and everything washed warmly across us. But unlike the rest of them, I was probably the only one in that room who've had multiple ones, and beyond that chose to come back. And most found that they were very reluctant to return, but for one reason or not, were sent back anyways. And I guess life was saying, well, you're still needed on earth and ground, so won't you please turn around?
Right, yes. I must say, of the various experiences I've read about, that inevitably is the case of when you're out of your body, as you rightly pointed out there, you feel somewhat more free, energetic and happy, and it's no wonder perhaps that people don't particularly want to come back. But by the same token, you've got a life contract, and I think you want to do your best to complete it. Now, do you actually remember in detail the experience you had when you were four?
I remembered the moment when the tractor was starting to run over my body, and I grabbed the thick cleat with my little hands, and I remember saying no with a great deal of determination. And then at that moment, it was like a great prison door slammed with a bright flash. Mm-hmm. And the next thing I remembered, I was sitting in a realm beyond this one, into a world which I've visited a few times, which I've come to call Javunda. And yeah. The beautiful aspect about that distant world was life lived always, and death was not even known. And it leaved. And by the way, Michael, it's very quickly in these near-death or death experiences, cognition in the mind is suspended. So we're left with these deep, deep impressions which come back in our dreams, come back in our everyday, come back in times of reflection and meditation. And I guess my advantage is that I've had so many of them, I was able over time to kind of put the mosaic together and now formulate this beautiful view of a longer life, how leaving here can be living on, and how death is a matter of whether we choose to live in life or whether we have chose to take from life. And it need not to be a permanent situation.
Right. Now, since you seem to have had these multiple experiences, did you in between also have what you might call normal out-of-the-body experiences without having to go through the trauma of death or near death?
Yes, and, oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I have to constantly monitor myself and remind myself that I'm still in you know, the world of existence. And by the way, for your listeners, I think it's important that from the get-go that they understand that there are these different realities, and some just frequencies away, almost like if you were tuning up a radio, you can slide into another dimension and reality and not be lost or any the worse for it. In fact, each reality has its own design and laws, but for those who have broken and shattered the rational limits of existence, yes, it's easy to slip back, and sometimes it's a little disquieting for your family and friends and other people, and I have to just remind myself to check in every so often and remind myself of which world I'm in. One of my last such experience about 10 years ago, after being stung to death by a large hive of yellow jackets, I had a unique ability in my coma to step back and forth between Earth and another world, and it was really quite interesting how people here in this world regarded my conversations, and they spoke to me later of the things that I was saying in this bizarre language. But even though I was distant for 10 days from Earth, I knew I was stepping back, and I understood its familiarity. I understood it to be my home. And, you know, being on fire and then put on ice to cure it wasn't fun, but the longer view was very interesting. And I really think that's what this awakening, this remembering who we are, will bring us back to the ability to pierce the veil between these different worlds, which are valid and are that in which we belong to. I have no doubt that we're all the same age. We all began this journey of life together, albeit as light, you know, per your show, or a certain etheric presence. But as the journey of life has continued, we have changed, and we have met the conditions that the world has put in front of us. And by the way, Michael, that is, for me, the most gratifying and probably the greatest gift I can give to your listeners and to this world. And that is to answer those lifelong questions of who we are and why we are here. And who we are is we are beings of life. And the why we are here is that we carry the promise of understanding and illumination into a very dark place. And therefore, our suffering has value because we have work to do. And as we belong to this armada, if you will, of worlds that pass through this dark sphere, our mission, our journey, and our intention is to introduce life and the wonders of life to what was a very compressed, dark, and rigid space.
Right. Are you referring in that way to what is looked upon as the present situation where the Earth is concerned, where the vibrations are increasing, The light is possibly becoming the dominant force, and we're looking at a possible ascension in the very near future. Is that what you're referring to about
I definitely sense that possibility. I feel that, you know, we've been ages upon this journey. We've all been involved.
Right.
The beautiful thing is here that it's a collective effort, and the amount of awakening and remembering which needs to occur here quite soon is incredible, and it's a bit immense because a lot of people have need to stop manipulating and taking from the vessel and understand that it's the qualities of life that guide our celebrations and will sustain us. And we really need to get it all back in perspective. But I feel that there's one last horizon, one last curtain that needs to be lifted so that we'll go beyond being stuck into that wondrous tomorrow.
In your journeys to the other side, did you ever find out what the purpose was of the Earth, I mean, being a dark place?
No, well, I don't. First of all, the Earth and the reality of existence is a very legitimate world and very beautiful world. And when one has visited others and sat in other realities, we come to understand that hey, the diversity and the color, the wonder of this planet is just really quite special. What has made it so difficult, Michael, is the fact that the Earth vibration is inherently and necessarily slow because we are the lead world in this journey through darkness. And if you will, we carry the jackhammers. We are the mining bits. And the suffering and the death that occurs is just the force of placing that arrow and opening up this what was a very dark space to allow light and illumination in. And we are sellers of fortune. So we have nothing to be ashamed of, nothing to be afraid of. But now it is time. It is childhood's end, and we have to stop playing the games of dominion and the games of manifest destiny. We need to get off of our knees, which we're so comfortable in, with the belief of original sin and the thoughts that we're just not good enough or that we're fallen angels. Fact is, we are quite beautiful and special beings. Yes, it has been difficult. The journey's been long. The dying's not been fun. Dying's never fun. But believe me, there is a day with a beginning and not an end, and that lies and awaits our entrance.
Well, it's wonderful to hear you say that, Stephen. Do you mean that this dark space that we talk of is simply an area where the energy is of a very low vibration, or did it actually still contain souls?
I think that this space... And this is a tough question because, as the Kahuna from Maui said, if you don't live in a darkness, you can't know it. Mm. But let's put it this way: it has underlined and it has affected, you know, the dualistic experiences of life and death and love and hate. It is an opposing force, but not necessarily in the sense of the classic evil force. But it is, by very nature, restrictive. It's not co-creative. It's not warm. It's very cold and very rigid. And life looked in some ages ago and said, must we not wander there? Must we not understand and illumine this space? And that's really kind of what we're about. So as we've made our way, and the journey has been long, as we've made our way, I think we found it to be more difficult than we could have ever anticipated, even to the point where we now find that dark space has manifested restraint against our journey. And that restraint, in more ways than one, comes through the mind of humankind. And it has a lot to do with the scent of leaving life's river and with the thought that we are better, we can do it ourselves, that there's a pyramid and we belong on the very top, And the recovery here has everything to do with coming back down to the circle of life and understanding that the only way we can be special is if the other life systems that share this planet are special also. That is the huge dilemma. And individually, we have to commit to honoring the life within us and caring for the life around us. That's what puts tomorrow in front of us. This world of trinkets and materials, living in the hand of Caesar, is taking tomorrow away.
Right. Very well put. Do you think we're winning the battle, Stephen?
I think we are going to win the battle. I think that there is such an effervescence of spirit which cannot ultimately be denied. And I think that's what's happening today. Against all of these patterns of and bureaucracies and institutions, which don't mean a hill of beans to us, really, who have intentionally or otherwise enslaved so much of our hours and replaced our hopes and dreams with nonsense. There is an awakening, there's a sense in people, and I feel it more and more as I go out and speak to this message. People are yearning to once again believe. People are yearning and are willing to make the commitment to turn it around. And so I can't believe we would have come this far to throw it all away. And certainly that's the commitment of this message from my experiences. And maybe my mom was right many years ago when she said, you've got to speak to this, Stephen, because what you have seen is not just for you, but rather for the world. And so I would share this with the world with an open hand and say, remember the value that lives in you. Live always for that day when tomorrow won't matter. And yesterday will be the same as today, because today will never go away.
Now, from the age of four to your present age, and I've seen your photograph, and one assumes you're possibly in your 50s, was there any particular reason why you hadn't written a book before your first one, which I gather must have been fairly recent?
Yeah, I was afraid. I was... This I share with most near-death experiencers. We're reluctant to talk about the experience. These experiences strip you down to the most earliest and severe nakedness that you can imagine. You're more vulnerable. You're more sensitive. And I just didn't have the courage, and my mother beat on me for years, and it was finally my family doctor, Dr. Kuhar, who, after the dying with the bees, and she said, she actually committed to giving up her practice to listen to me speak and to write a book. So that's how that came about. And you know what? Since I've allowed that to happen, I have been doing pretty well here. I have not been slammed recently, and it was funny how my mother always said, Stephen, until you agree to talk about this, you're going to be reminded that, you received some protection, and now you have something to give to the world, and you must give it. So, yes, simply, Michael, I just couldn't find the courage.
Right, well, I should think that's fair enough. Maybe today more people are ready to listen to what you've got to say and believe you. But I would guess many, many years ago it was rather a touchy subject to discuss with people.
It was, and also the coming back is very disquieting. It's very uncomfortable. My first experience in the miracle in the hayfield when I was four, and my brothers and sisters left my bed that we shared on the old chicken farm and called me an alien and a devil. Because what they saw, they couldn't make sense out of this squash pizza that my mom picked up out of the meadow. And then 4 days later, I'm coming back and walking around and wanting to play. And what I didn't realize was that my body was all black and blue, and there was a lot of puncture wounds in it from where the bones had come through. So to a four-year-old, it's just great to be home. When I was into this other world, and just marvelous, marvelous place beyond speaking. And watching beings from this world come across this bridge who had obviously been those, some of those who had passed over. But I thought I was there forever almost, and yet I only hung from that hospital ceiling for 4 days in that plaster of Paris body cast. But it was a very rude awakening coming home and being ostracized and actually beaten. And then my next experience of being frozen in a blizzard and cut out of a fence by a farmer, another really obvious death experience to me. My classmates called me Popsicle, which sounds kind of funny now, but, you know, when you're a nine-year-old in third grade, it's harsh because you are just so sensitive. And I think most experiencers would agree with me that it's sometimes safer and seems easier to just keep it quiet. And another thing is, we don't know how to translate this awesome experience into cognition, because trust me, out-of-the-body experiences differ from near-death experiences because the mind can remain intact. But in a true death or near-death experience, we transcend this box entirely. The mind has no place in it. It only gropes for a way to understand and explain it once we return to Earth consciousness.
Right. So, all told, I mean, have you been able to keep count of the number of near-death experiences you've had?
Well, altogether there were 14. I would say six of them were true death experiences, and the other eight we could say were near-death. A couple lightning strikes, a drowning, a couple severe automobile accidents in which I lost my favorite brother in one. And any rate, there's a whole list of them. A lot of discomfort surrounded them, but I guess I feel enriched at this point in my life to have these longer views of life. And imagine that, a simple little four-year-old chicken farmer comes back from the other side, and he dares to ask this age-long mystifying question, or answer it rather, of who we are and why we are here. And I get a lot of personal gratification and power in looking at these old traditions that bind us to original sin and karmic debt, and I say, no, it's not so. Get off your knees and spread your wings, because this is truly who we are. And when you look at the journey of life, that's such a beautiful answer to the lifelong question of the why and the how. Hey, life has found a way to individualize and send its presence into this difficult realm. And in so many ways, we co-create as we go by living in the qualities of life, of love and friendship and artistic expression. And caring is a huge one. And passion. And I see and I sense that people are awakening to their passions again. They're just tired of going along to get along. And if anything matters, Michael, then everything matters. So once somebody awakens to that, they can no longer justify pissing their life away.
Right. Now, you mentioned that we are beings of light. In your travels, did you find out where we came from to take this challenge coming to the earth?
We came from that eternal sea of life in an impulse of creation. And we began as light, but as the journey continued and we entered deeper and deeper into the darkness, I like to remind people, life found us in the rocks, turned the key, and freed the locks. And what I mean by that is that as we went from the fluid vibration impulse of creation or light, and time has passed, and age into age revealed yet more journey, more traveling, we became ever more structures and function, meaning that we actually borrowed from the mass in that space of darkness to build our bodies from, to build our cognitions, our mental structures and biological pathways. And then the beautiful thing about that is that not only was life able to create that potential, but it also sustains it. So we owe a great deal to those very simple and beautiful qualities of love and friendship and caring, because that's what sustains the life in us. The body will wear and melt down. There's no question. But, and this is the beautiful thing from the near-death experiences, we'll get another one. And it was so amazing. You know, and I can say this with a great deal of certainty. It might be a little bit troubling for some people. But we existed long before the body was built upon us. And that's how near-death and death experiences happen. We transcend the body, but we're still there. And we can look back at the body or the situation, the highway, the car accident, and we can say, what am I doing down there? Because it takes us a while to get it. So really what we've come to realize is that we long preceded this body, and we are a being of consciousness. So the other side of that story is we're much more than our body. Therefore, vibrations, illumination, our radiance goes out and can touch the world in miraculous and beautiful ways. And that's what I mean by if something matters, everything matters. We are always, we may always choose to go out and exact a sense of beingness with whatever situation arises. And the more we will carry light and love within us, the more we are looming the darkness is in this world, and it no longer has any place to hide. We can carry a wick for those who still sleep and offer without carrying them. We can't carry anybody, but we can offer our light so that they might better see the trouble, the depression, and whatever bonds them in their world. Because it's a collective experience, and ultimately, this one and last age before the open sea will occur when the collective value of all life taken simultaneously throws wide that now locked door in this very near horizon.
Mm. Well, I'm very pleased to hear that. I like the way you express these things. You clearly have touched the light very much so yourself. I think you've got a very good understanding. Now, you spoke of there being different realities. Do they all relate to us in some way?
Okay, good question. Some of my experiences, my edge experiences, clearly introduced me to a different world, and there was a sense of journey and travel. The wind whipped, the hair seemed to be torn from me, the skin seemed to fly from the body. And then, like with the near-death experience, or the death experience in the blizzard when I was 9, this introduced me very casually and comfortably to another reality of our world of Earth. So the biggest question is, there are clearly different worlds with unique designs and laws, but they all belong to the journey. But they're very different, very beautiful, each with its own character. And then surrounding each world, I do believe, are different levels or realities. Because I awoke in this netherland of Earth, and I say of Earth because I met so many, my grandpa and my closest cousin who had recently died, and an interesting lady who I saw in my dreams, who turned out to be from Lost River, Virginia. And they were there counseling me, one about the miracle, the wonders of death and the miracle of life, and scolding me for missing the school bus, which put me out there in the battlefield of life. And I was trying to make my way home in a blizzard, and I fell through the river and drowned. And apparently some of these beings had their hand in getting me out of the river so a farmer could find me. Now, that's a little bit not so clear, but I was eventually found frozen in a farmer's fence, and he actually cut me out of it because he couldn't free my hands and thawed me out by his wood stove. But the interesting thing about this reality of what I call the Netherland is that those who had preceded me and us reside there very patiently in a space, a comfortable space. They don't move much. They're phantoms for sure. They live in low illumination, and they line up behind us as we introduce our intentions to the sun and to the planet. They are with us. They, in other words, we are their voice, we are their eyes, and we are their hopes into this world. And that should give all of us a greater sense of meaning, because we stand in now for those who made our day possible on the deck of life. So that represented for me, because everything was the same, I knew, hey, this is still Earth. And then in my phenomenological experiences, I have met some of them who have peeped through the veil, if you will. I have met their spirit beings and have heard them speak to me. And I spend almost all my time when I'm not with my children or my chickens, I spend just about all my time, you know, regarding the phenomenological and the unseen. I spend a great deal of time at night just wandering through the woods. And you know what? I wonder why I don't meet more of us there, because it's a very busy place. There is just so much going on in the ethers, and we are not alone. And let me tell you, it's also possible to connect and pierce that veil, especially within the realities that belong to this earth. We are very comfortable here, and we share much in common. What we don't share is the solid mass that a so-called living person supports as we move through the world. These beings are obviously phantoms, but they are not dead. They did not go away, and they're still here.
Right. In your travels on the other side, did you ever come to the areas that are believed to be there that are also of the dark?
Yes, I did. Actually, very painfully. And consequently, I counsel people, the way we live our life has to do with so much with what might be next for us. And there are some very troubling fandom realms. And I was also, my biggest quick statement on that is that beyond the bridge between this world and what might be next for us is this vast kind of space, which I called no man's land. And many of us will be there for either a shorter or longer period of time. But if life does not know you, therefore meaning, if you have not cared for life, if you have lived a life of grabbing what wasn't yours or experienced manipulation to a fault and really have not loved and not honored friendship, life won't know you, but darkness will. And in this space, every so often, as I would sit there waiting for where I was going in my death experiences, every so often it seems like the vast night opens up and a huge vacuum kind of sound. And then these phantoms who can't seem to sit down, hunker down, they're really beings without trust, just get sucked right out. And you can see them going by the thousands. And a lot of people say, well, do they suffer? And sadly, I'd have to say they don't suffer. I think suffering is something that belongs to people who are doing the very best they can and have the right intentions. And life matters, even if they're living in ways which seem to question what we're doing. But there are so many of us who are depressed or angry, and what we can hold out for them is the prospect of awakening and remembering their bigger and beautiful beingness. And if we allow that and we hold our candle high, they'll come along. But some choose not to. And believe it or not, Michael, I'm convinced there's a few of us, not many, thank goodness, but there's actually a few amongst us who enjoy the pain and suffering that surrounds us. And they do, therefore, serve the darkness. And so life has no place for them, but the darkness knows them. but there are these realms, yes.
Right. Now, you have written two books, one called Something More, and the second one, More or Less. Now, what is the message that you're really trying to put forward in these books?
Okay, well, Something More was when I dared to, and found the courage to come out and speak to the longer view of life, and I spoke to the importance of knowing that it didn't begin here and it doesn't end here, at least it doesn't have to. The Something More is celebrates my mother, who was a mother of 15 children and single births, and who protected me ever since the tractor accident, and really was a special healer in her later years. As well as I talk about the difference between right behavior and wrong behavior, and I include some of my own darkness in that. Mm-hmm. And that got quite a bit of attention, and the people who got to the book then started to ask me, Steve, if there's going to be something more in my life, I introduce these other realities and worlds, what do I have to do to have it? So then I sat down and wrote the longer book called More or Less. And my daughter did a beautiful illustration on the front of hands that are crossed. And in one hand, which is open, there is a beautiful blue eye. The other hand is a fist, and there's teardrops running out of it. And thus, the more or less, if we extend our hand in trust and service and caring, there will be much more. If we're going to be one who takes and manipulates and calls it ours, there won't be a whole lot more tears. So the more or less is a big book, and it talks about seeing. It talks about the difference about who we are as sellers of fortune. It talks about the nighttime servers and who they are and how they come into your life. It's a powerful book. It talks about what time is it, and we talk about this, the coming age. And then it closes with probably the most powerful chapter, which is what's next for us. And it talks about the different tickets that we earn at the bridge of passage by, you know, what we have done with our life. And it's my truth. Obviously not many other people have had these experiences, but it comes from high regard and a very humble person who really wants nothing more from this world than the simple joys of the sensuous. Getting up, smelling, seeing, kissing and hugging. That's really what it is. It's all it is.
You found that it's great to be alive.
Yes. And I love this world, and there'll be more world for me. I don't know that I'll be back here ever again, but I really love the Earth, and I think we all do. And sadly, because we haven't understand why we suffer and die, so many people have lost their faith and their basic trust, and they have removed themselves from life's hand, thinking that they can do it on their own. And the farther we remove ourselves from life, the bigger the tear to our soul, the darker our presence, there's not as much light. And as a consequence, we're out there trying to dance among with Caesar, and we're buying into the accumulations instead of exhilaration, and we're accepting patterns of living that have very little value and meaning to us. And consequently, we sense that deep existential kind of lostness. And that's what's so beautiful about the message. It simply says, hey, come back. Put your hand back in life. Some people would say God, but put your hand back in life and see what she serves you, because it won't be easy, but there's a future to it, and there's more. And as soon as we do what life asks of us, she'll ask us to do more, because the journey of life is not a cruise. It is rather a beautiful opportunity to manifest an individuality and become a true co-creator of goodness.
Right. Now, in your travels, did you ever meet any of the spiritual masters, say, such as Jesus?
No, I never did. And I think these beings don't just hang out in some rarefied air. I think they are fully integrated into one world or another. People have asked me, did I meet God? What did he say? Did I meet Jesus? And I'm sure these are wonderful beings and propositions, but, you know, I have to say I had guides, often had guides, and oftentimes I sensed was being led, but I knew somebody was there, but they weren't revealed. And it might very well be because I'm coming back that I wasn't allowed to cross, you know, that ethereal line that would allow you to align with the soul of these masters or Jesus. But I wasn't looking for Jesus or God. I wasn't looking for these discoveries. You know, I wasn't looking for these accidents that propelled me to these lands. I've always been just up to my neck in living and did something stupid or put myself in harm's way. Even at four, the reason I was run over by the tractor, I was out in the hayfield over my head trying to scurry up the pheasants and rabbits so that that haymaking equipment wouldn't mangle them, you know. And that's why I was there. And frozen in a blizzard, I stayed in a tree too long and got hit by lightning. I mean, so... But for the most part, except a wicked cocaine addiction, I was caught, you know, in the circumstances. And I would have to say with the cocaine addiction, which introduced a lot of pain and struggle, I left that door open, and I take full responsibility for that. But in these other instances, no, not so much. I was really trying to be a pretty good guy, trying to have a good life, living a life, and doing stupid things, and they caught up to me. Right. What can I say?
I think I would say you sound quite normal.
Yeah, good. That's always what I've strived to do. I do want to comment a little bit on the spiritual masters and the spiritual path, though, Michael, because I have some issues with what well-intended and conscious people are doing from the standpoint that so many are seeking a higher consciousness, a God consciousness, or some special spirituality, which often only becomes to equate ideas of goodness and spirituality. And Earth is a world of manifestation. The spiritual path must be the pervasive, persistent, conscious walk through this world with right action and right thought. And when you are doing that, you can't get any higher. The message from me and from Earth is to please be here now. She's crying for our participation. Trust in the life that began us, and that will be the very life that will sustain us. There is no place for people to jump off the ship or climb some ladder out of the beautiful, diverse living systems that already exist. None of those who seek that so-called super consciousness would really be happy there. Trust me, it would be rarefied air, but I do understand what they're sensing. They're sensing that connection, that unity with God, that oneness with eternalness, that universal intelligence, and that is who we are, but we're not home yet. And you can't just jump off this thing out here in this middle of this night, in this journey, and find your way. In fact, the easiest way to get lost is to serve ideas in place of sensuality. We need to be sensuous about our life and celebrate it in every way. To know it and smell it and touch it and build it and put those seeds in fertile soil and watch the beauty of the co-creative powers. That will carry us beyond these troubling times. And I do know there's so many people out there with good intentions, and so much of it's about discovery. But you know what? We can't discover anything. But as we prepare our inner room, it will all be revealed. That was the beautiful message of the death experiences. The revelations are awesome. Even before you can ask a question, the answer is given. You're out now in the open space of spirit. There is no gravity. There are no constraints. But yet there is an urgency to be involved in earth at this point, to hold your candle high. Allow others to know of your wings so that they might have theirs. It's all coming together, and we can help assist it. In fact, we very much want to be relevant and understand the context of this great voyage. And that's what it is. And it doesn't end in death. Death is just a passage. And we can choose to allow death to be the beginning of an entrance into another room in our house of life.
Very nice message for our listeners. Now, Stephen, we're getting near to the last few minutes of the program, which allow me to announce next week's guest. So before I have to say goodbye to you, perhaps you'd like to tell our listeners where your books are available from and mention your website address.
Sure. I hope I hope some of the listeners are enjoying this. The website is stephenredding.com, and that's Stephen with a P-H, and Redding with a double D, R-E-D-D-I-N-G. And the books, if you order them from the website, I don't know if you can do that anymore, but if you want one, I'll sign one. Otherwise, people get them from Amazon, some of the bookstores. They're out there someplace. And we also do monthly a video blog. Somebody comes here, and we do a video and a message. And if people sign up for the website, they will get notice they will get to see those video blogs, which have become quite popular, by the way. And they're about 8 to 10 minutes, and we build on the message. And every so often, we have a festival, and also the website announces where I'm speaking and when I'm speaking. But having said that, you know, this is a message that belongs to all of us. I don't do technology, but I do have people who are supporting the message who will answer emails. And if it's specific enough, I will write it in longhand, and somebody will send an email back. So, yes, you can communicate me through the website. And I think that people would love the video blogs if they're liking the introduction to the message. But these are exciting times, Michael, and it's a good time to be alive, but please understand, it's not easy. There are already set in motion some very difficult, phenomena that we have to deal with, but let me remind people, we've been through this before. We have been here always. The Earth has had these traumas, and she will burp a few more times, but we're in a space now, along with this vision and this message, when we can get it right again. We can remember how it is, and we can awaken to our call. And it's a very joyful early dawning. It's not the evening light of a once great creation. It still remains the dawning light of a new creation.
That's very nice. Thank you very much. It's been great to have you on the program, Stephen. I'm sorry we lost a few minutes at the start. Otherwise, we would have had a little longer with you.
Well, that's fine. And if your listeners enjoyed it, and we can do another chapter sometime.
Yes, I hope so. It's been very interesting. So thank you very much for coming onto the program.
You're certainly welcome. And from Eastern Pennsylvania, fond farewell to all.
Thank you very much, Stephen. I wish you every success with the books. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Right, friends, another interesting near-death experience. Well, more than one for the money there. My guest next week is going to be Nick Redfern. He's just written a book called The NASA Conspiracies. I'm sure everybody at some time has heard of the conspiracies with regard to what NASA is hiding. And Nick has new evidence of agency cover-ups, so we will be discussing those and other things in his book. So thank you for being with me today, and I do hope you can be with me next week. God bless you all. Thank you very much.